Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the July 2020 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for calling in this morning. In the spirit of social distancing, we are holding all of our meetings by telephone. Members of the public that may be on the phone are encouraged to make comments and ask questions. If you do wish to make comments, please hold those comments until the conclusion of the business session this afternoon. This morning's meeting is a study session. Today we have all five commissioners on the phone: General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Walquist, and Assistant Clerk of the Board Teresa Boucher is joining us, all in the boardroom. If you would like to please at this time join me in a Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic which it stands, one nation,
under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice
for all. Thank you. And Steve, we have a HPI moment this morning?
We do, yes. Okay, and so we've got Casey Headley who's on the phone, and I see Dave Barkle in the room. That's why I was a little confused for a moment there. So, Casey, you are up.
I'm ready to go if everybody can hear me.
We can hear you good.
Okay, so our safety topic will be about skin cancer, which in light of the weekend temperatures seems like an appropriate one, David Parkfield chosen. So skin cancer is actually the most common form of cancer in the United States. Each year in the U.S., almost 5.5 million cases of non-melanoma skin cancer are diagnosed. It's also the easiest to cure if diagnosed early. When allowed to progress, however, it can result in disfigurement and, in extreme cases, even death. The good news is there are prevention actions we can all take. Seek the shade when feasible, especially between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. Do not let your skin burn. This may seem like an obvious statement, but it's very common to be active out in the sun and not realize that you're getting sunburned. Avoid tanning, and actually, as recommended now, never use UV tanning beds. And in case of the tanning beds, this use of equipment can increase the chance of cancer by a range of 20 to 60%.
Wow.
When outside, cover up with clothing, including a broad-brimmed hat, UV-blocking sunglasses, and now there's many options of UV-blocking clothing. While outside, use a broad-spectrum UVA/UVB sunscreen. These acronyms actually reference the ultraviolet wavelengths. One has to do with skin aging, and the other has to do with skin burning. For general low exposure and limited time frames, an SPF of 15 is typically adequate. However, with extended outdoor activities, a broad spectrum sunscreen with an SPF of 30 or higher is now recommended. And always remember, if participating in water activities, to apply a water-resistant product. In regards to application of sunscreen, you're required to apply the product at a minimum of 15 minutes before going outside and allowing it to soak into your skin. And remember, when swimming or in a situation where you have excess sweating, it can be required for you to reapply sooner than the actual recommendation. A couple last items. It's always suggested you keep newborns out of the sun, and sunscreen should only be used on babies over the age of 6 months. And occasionally, examine your own skin from head to toe. And if you think it's necessary, you can coordinate with your healthcare provider to schedule what's called a skin cancer screening. And that wraps our safety minute up. Thank you for your time, and be safe out in the sun.
Thank you, Casey.
Thank you, Casey. This is Commissioner Smith, and I just wanted to share, my fellow commissioners are aware of this, but I've had two bouts with skin cancer on my head. And this is, you can't repeat what you just said often enough as far as I'm concerned. The one final step that I've taken and will continue to take is consulting the dermatologist on at least an annual basis, just as a precaution, because we don't see it all.
Yeah, good for you. Good plan.
Well, good. So, Casey, again, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Good presentation.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. So, commissioners, we're at that point where we would move forward with the approval of the agenda. Any item on the consent agenda shall be subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon request of any commission member. Do I hear any such request?
Gary, this is Steve. I would propose moving item number 10 to the consent agenda.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor of moving item number 10 to the consent agenda say aye.
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 Aye. Those opposed say nay. The ayes have it. So, Steve, I'm going to turn this back over to you to talk about our CPO winners.
Yes, and we have a couple today. I understand that possibly one is not able to join us. I do want to talk about him first. Daniel Martin came to us from Alcoa. He brought a lot of knowledge and experience, especially in the safety arena. And during his, especially his first year here, he looked around and said, boy, there's a lot of things here that could be done better. And he began to escalate those issues through the organization. And ultimately got to me. And I have to say, he made a really compelling case that we should be finding ways to be able to do things better. And to some extent, I would say his input even led to the decision of moving the safety manager to a direct report to the general manager. He also identified action items that became an important part of Tim Pettit's agenda over the time that he was in the safety role. So we are grateful to Daniel for the work that he's done. He certainly displayed the characteristics that we're looking for in terms of taking ownership of an issue, not just saying, oh, it's somebody else's problem or no one will do anything about it. Even if I speak up, he did speak up, and ultimately we were able to make some changes as a result of the input that he provided. So he is one of this month's winners. Daniel, are you on the phone today? I think that something had come up I heard this morning. He had originally intended to be here, so obviously very committed to his job, so not able to join us this time. Next up is a team of folks, Randy Pauly, Megan Bradenburg, Lauren Connor, Kellen Spade, and Tim O'Brien. This team is extremely focused on cybersecurity, keeping track of the threat landscape that's around us, which has become even more threatening over the course of the last few months in the world of COVID. And so they just incredible in terms of their commitment and dedication to trying to keep employees aware of the threats that are out there and educating them about it. The board, I'm sure, sees their input to them just as other employees do. We wanted to say take a moment to recognize their colleagues have nominated them. And the senior team felt that they are worthy of recognition as this month's Cycle of Personal Ownership winners. Randy, or anyone from the team, we would welcome you if you'd like to share any thoughts with the board.
Well, I'll speak up here for a minute and then allow anybody else to add to it if they choose to. You are correct, Steve. This cybersecurity stuff continues to just get nothing but more challenging. And that's not just for my team. That's for every employee anywhere in any organization. We've always prided ourselves on doing a good job of taking care of our responsibilities. I can tell you that we have a pretty successful cybersecurity program here today, and there's two contributing key factors to that. First and foremost, the upper management support has been phenomenal here. So thank you, Steve, all the executive managers, and you commissioners, too, for allowing us that opportunity. And the other key is the engagement that we get from all employees. And Steve, I think you can attest to the struggles we had early on with some of that. But we have actually made very good ground in that, too. You know, with our required training and us doing our own assessments, I think that stuff is more well-received now with the intention behind it, that we're not just singling people out and tricking and trapping them. And in that regard, this year was kind of an escalated time frame for completing all of our security awareness training. And I checked this morning, and we're down to just over 80 employees that have yet to complete it. And brace yourselves, that list is not without commissioner names, too. So there's my plug for getting your security awareness training done. Thank you very much for the recognition on this. And if anyone on my team has anything to add, I'll let them do that. It's pretty quiet.
Well, I would like to just offer one other thought. These folks are dogged in their pursuit of making sure that all employees are aware of the risks that are out there. They find lots of different ways of keeping us notified. The threats do change all the time. We've seen some really interesting ones recently where vendor email accounts have been taken over by third parties, and that's pretty hard to understand. Something comes in with an appropriate email account, and it turns out it's a fraud in action. So even with that, because of the work that these folks have done to make employees aware, we've caught, so far, we think all of those. So it seems to be working, and we really appreciate everything that they are doing.
So, Gary, this is Randy. I just wanted to comment to Randy and his team that one of the things I really appreciate is the constant reminders with the real life examples, such as Steve just mentioned, of how we're being attacked. And I think keeping it in front of us is just on a regular basis is a powerful tool to ingrain the any unsolicited email is a bad email mindset. And, thank you for keeping us as commissioners aware on an ongoing basis.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. We would never exclude you folks from any of that stuff. It's just too important.
Randy, this is Gary, and I want to echo Commissioner Smith's comments that having adopted the role of at least on the commission level, the cybersecurity communicator back to the board, and have now taken several classes, it's absolutely astounding to me that we are as successful as we are, and that you guys are and your team. It's mind-boggling. The resources that foreign governments are throwing against the United States and in the form of cybersecurity, and you guys are doing a really great job. So really appreciate your team and what you guys are doing. Just keep up the good work.
Thank you, Commissioner Arsenal. Just as a side note, as you're learning more and more about this stuff, and I'm not sure what the proper protocol is, but myself and my entire team are happy to answer any questions around cybersecurity and especially how it pertains to the district.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Randy, Dennis Holmes, just to you and your team, thanks so much for what you do. It was kind of interesting this past week at the Puputa Commissioner Roundtable, somebody said, that in their organization, that their cybersecurity team oftentimes will send out little phishing messages to see who's on their phones or not. And several people expressed that that was a really novel idea. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I think we get tested pretty frequently. And the thing I really appreciate most is no one's exempt from your team's probing into where our soft spots may be, and I appreciate that tremendously. And so thanks for doing that.
Thank you very much.
Well, Randy, be sure to pass these comments back onto your staff, would you, and your group. They're all doing a great job, and we really appreciate their hard work.
I will pass it along. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Steve, would you like to move on?
I would, and but this next one I'll be turning back over to the board. This is the quarterly board balance scorecard status update. And so,
okay.
Commissioner Arsenault, I'll be passing this one back to you.
All righty. That sounds good. And so, at this point, commissioners, we should be discussing the balanced scorecard. Anne, I see you're, well, how would you like to do this, commissioners? Let's just put it, would you want to go through each category or just talk about exceptions?
I think exceptions.
Okay.
Exceptions, yeah.
Okay. Well, we're, other than the timing on cycles, Anne, I guess the only thing that I, Anne, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I didn't know if you, I have nothing to report. We did make a few additions. Rebecca and I did, but that went out to all of you in an email. So I have nothing new to add.
I think the only thing that was probably appropriate and to point out to anyone who might be listening is that attendance to what would normally be our tri-commission meetings and mid-sea meetings has been hampered by COVID. And so physical attendance and physical meetings have been canceled as a result of that.
And that's now noted in our balance scorecard as a, additional note.
Yes.
At the bottom.
Yes. I was wanting to make sure that if anyone was on the line and they noticed that we at least voiced the fact that it was a COVID-driven decision. So, really, I don't see an exception to be brought up at this time. Does anyone have any questions about the appointment and meeting, virtual meeting matrix that's attached? Everything look accurate in with the meetings that those commissioners have attended, or at least virtually?
I agree with
Gary, this is Steve.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Randy. Yes.
No, I just said I agree with Gary, so Steve's turn.
I just wanted to let my fellow commissioners know that Eric and Gary and I met the other day to review and work on governance policies. We do have some things we'll be bringing to you in the future that we're working on. I won't report on those now, but just let you know we're working on it, and we'll have some things to update mission and vision and have some discussions in the future. So that's all I have to report on that.
Thank you, Steve. Does anyone else have any?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dennis.
The two that I would comment on is, one is that in one of my categories we have the general manager semi-annual evaluation. And I would just like us to note that we have completed that. It just needs to be written up, formalized, and signed off on. But the evaluation's done.
Thank you, Dan.
And then the second thing is on the scorecard matrix. I noticed that there's a credit being given to all with constituents. And I didn't realize that. I always just list mine as communication. And so I don't think that that I've had credit for, you know, response in terms of call with constituent. So maybe if we could take a look at that in terms of maybe a specific designation for that communication, or maybe I just have been remiss in not noting that as a call with constituent.
Dennis, I'm glad you brought that up. I noticed it as well, and I also have not phrased it in that manner. I have bulked it into either a category of meetings and phrased it as a meeting, or even occasionally I'll just phrase it as a office time where I'm in my office and on the phone. So I think you're right. We maybe need to discuss clarity, what works best and what would be most appropriate.
Yeah, because I think much of what happens is emails and phone calls, and so I have not listed those separately. I've just always listed it as communication.
So, yeah. And Steve, maybe as general manager, you have some guidance or could ask someone who could give us a hand on that.
I don't know that I have any guidance at the moment. I probably would look to Rebecca to see if she's got any thoughts about how to handle that.
Good morning, okay. Commissioners. This is Rebecca Garfine. I do have a question. So I had started adding those constituent calls and contacts where I could identify them in an effort to capture more of the activities that you all are doing. However, knowing that you all have those communications with your constituents, maybe I got a little too granular, so I'll let you give direction as to whether or not you want those things called out on a date-by-date basis, or if you want to keep it more to meetings, just knowing that you are making all those constituent calls and contacts and emails and other things.
Commissioners, any thoughts on preference?
I'll wait like... on here. This is Ann.
Yes, Ann.
Hello? Yeah. So my personal opinion is that would be really difficult and cumbersome. I have a lot of calls. I have a lot of emails to list every single one of those would be really, really difficult. So I trust all my fellow commissioners to just say, you know, basically list communication with constituents. I think that's all we need.
Okay, thanks, Ann. And, you know, and I'll jump in and say that I've, without becoming too granular, have used in the past just the term that, you know, I've spent half hour, an hour, office time. And that office time is going to do a variety of things, not just one thing, but it would include phone calls and emails to constituents. So without making this burdensome, I like to cast a wide net, and I don't know what other commissioners feel.
Well, you guys are making me feel bad because I don't do as much detail as anybody, I don't think. So I'm with Ann on the trust side.
Yeah.
Yeah, as well on the trust side. I think if we're going to do it, just a singular term like communications just kind of pulls it all together. If you're audited, then you need to stand the heat of the audit.
Yep.
Gary, I do the same thing that you do. I just mark down office time, which includes my daily check-ins to email and phone calls. That's all I do.
Yeah. And so, I Rebecca, is that enough information for you to go forward?
I guess I would just ask for clarity. Are you wanting me to continue to mark down then when you note communications and constituent calls, or do you just want to leave those in the blue book and have this report focus on community meetings?
My preference, Rebecca, would be to just leave them in the blue book. Let us know communications or, you know, something to that effect, you know, for the blue book, but not chart it.
Okay, I thought that's what I was hearing, but I wanted to confirm.
Yeah, are, that's only a
percent. Sure. How do others feel?
I agree.
Yeah, I agree, and you'll probably see my notations as just office time, and you know, unless I need to drill down any further than that, that will also include communication and emails and phone calls, et cetera.
Great, thank you. That's perfect guidance. I can go forward with that.
Great. Thank you.
Yep, and thanks to everyone for listening. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Dennis. Appreciate your comments. Yep. Are always well-received and spot on, so thank you for your wisdom.
So, Gary, this is Ann.
Yes, Ann.
I just wanted to let the commissioners know that I did do the midpoint evaluation write-up for Steve Wright, and Rebecca, I believe, has put those in the mail. It should be, you should have received them by now, the draft of it.
So, Ann, I think you were going to send those to me in a PDF.
Oh, you still didn't get it in PDF. Oh,
I don't
right.
think so.
Right. Okay, I'll look at that again today. Great.
Okay,
thanks.
And Ann, good work, and thank you for your efforts.
Sure, you're welcome.
Do we have any other discussions on the board balance scorecard? Hearing no further discussion, Steve, I think we're ready to move on to the service center.
Okay. Next up is the service center site work construction update. Dan Frazier and David Lodge should be on the phone. We'll turn it over to them.
Good morning, Steve. Dan here. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services.
Good morning. David Lodge, Project Manager.
So we're here today to give you another update and a preview. We were at the board meeting on June 1st, I believe, to give an update on the progress of the design. We talked at that meeting about project risks and about next steps, and here we're back to really start working on those next steps. We'll be giving an overview. We have two of our partners here on our project team to give a little overview of the process we've been through. This obviously was a general contractor construction manager project, one of our, not our first, but definitely one of our largest, and we want to talk a little bit about the process we've been through and why we're doing this and why it's different. Then David will cover the scope of what's called the Guarantee Maximum Price, the GMP Amendment for Site Work Construction, which is a small, we're calling it our mini-MAC, our small package to start the project. And really that's previewing a resolution that will be coming forward at the August 3rd meeting. And David will also cover the project schedule and where we're at in that process. So go ahead, David.
So thank you, commissioners, for having us today. Like Dan mentioned, we've got Randy Cook from TCF Architecture and John Vandervate of Absher Construction on the phone, and wanted to introduce them to you because we're going to be working very closely together over the next few years and let you hear about a little bit what they're working on. So, Randy, go ahead.
Well, good morning, commissioners and everyone. I wish we could all be face-to-face. Glad to be on the call with you. Since your last update, I'll just give you some milestones. We completed a very significant milestone, which is what we call our design development phase. During this phase, that all of the significant design decisions are set in place. Site is completely designed in terms of where everything is, structural systems, mechanical, electrical systems, major materials selections. Everything coalesced into a complete project at this point. There's much work to do. From this point on, we will be in construction documents, which is the detailed documents that will take us all the way through a building permit submittal out in mid-October and then through the end of the year for final pricing and into construction first of the year next year. During this time, there's been a tremendous amount of input from PUD staff, which is always appreciated. I'm glad we were able to do that before we went into the COVID period, although even during this period, we've had a lot of good interaction just via our other tools. The GCCM process has provided us with just a highly collaborative environment for our design team to work directly with Absher's team, and especially being able to tap into Absher's relationships with so many subcontractors that at this stage of the game, while they will ultimately bid on the project, are able to provide input across all the different disciplines. And that is so beneficial for us at this stage for a project as large and complex as this is. So with that, we've been able to continue to assess and explore alternatives, always looking for the most cost-effective, best value-driven design solutions, which I believe we are settled in on now in all of those major systems. The depth of knowledge and experience across the team has really been evident, especially during this time of COVID, where you just rely so heavily on being able to communicate directly with that depth of knowledge and experience across across all those disciplines and all those trades. So we're heading into the construction document phase now with a lot of momentum and a lot of confidence to deliver on schedule and on budget. Also during this time, we were able to put out the first bid set, which is all the site work. I'll let John speak more to that. Thank you.
Go ahead, John. John, you might be on mute. Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes we can.
Okay, sorry. Sorry, yeah, but this is John Vanderbeek with Absher. Thanks for having me today. So a little bit about during pre-construction. Obviously, we help with budgets and look at developing a scope for the subcontractor pricing and basically comments back on design. We've had really great engagement from the subcontractors on this. There's been lots of examples where we really contributed. A quick one was, you know, on some structural steel. We had a steel fabricator brought up. There were some certain size steel that you could only get from Japan at a real premium. So we were able, the structural engineers were able to make changes and basically cut some costs out of the project that you normally wouldn't see on a hard bid sort of project. So it's just been great input from subcontractors. On both scope and pricing, on scheduling, once again, great information back from subs. We've really been able to dial in on the schedule and what time of year certain things will happen. So we're able to make product selections based on whether in winter or out of winter, the sequencing of the projects. I think we've really dialed in, especially the structural systems, what the schedule is going to look like. I think we've been able to get a lot of input to where we're really able to make the most efficient use of our time and the schedule. And that's pretty much what I had, David.
Thanks, John.
And David, before we jump in, before we go on, I just want to add one quick thing for the board that, well, we are quite far along in the design process. I know there's a effort going on right now to engage the board on what the board room will look like. And I just want to make sure you know that there's plenty of opportunity there for your input to be able to change the design, alter it in ways that you think are going to create the kind of environment that we want there. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Steve. Okay, so we're really excited about our team and the work we've accomplished so far in bringing the design as far as it has come. And we are ready to start on the site work portion of work. So we're on slide four now. One of the things John talked about was the ability to plan out the schedule and the sequence of the project for the maximum efficiency. And one of the early determinations we made is that we should pull the site work scope of work forward and detail out that work, bid it out, and start it this summer so we can take advantage of the warmer weather while we continue to develop the rest of the project. That's where Steve was saying there's still opportunity to fine-tune the design on the interiors while we're doing the site work construction. So we've pulled site work forward, and the scope of that is the clearing of the site, grading, underground utilities, all the site electrical, and then we have soil improvements for the building foundations called aggregate piers. So then to see how that lays out on our schedule, we can go to slide five, and you can see that we can start doing that work this summer when we finish up construction documents and bidding for the rest of the project, and then begin that work in the winter and start on our building structures.
That work is still estimated about 2 years for the construction window, so still finishing at the end of 2022 and moving in late that year and early into 2023. Moving to slide six, we talk about the specific cost for the site work GMP. We've bid out the civil work, the aggregate piers, and we have Schmidt Electric as our electrical partner on the project, and we've been able to come up with a subcontract cost. And then it includes a contractor's contingency of 3%, and that's a contingency that we as a team decide how to spend within the guaranteed maximum price. And then the specified general conditions, which were a bid amount, and negotiated support services. This is services that the GCCM provides for the project, so all the sanitation, sandy cans, the hoisting, site cleanup, and those kind of items. And then their bid fee. So that gives us a guaranteed maximum price of $9,076,587. And this came in line with our previous estimates for the site work scope of work. And when we execute this guaranteed maximum price, it is still subject to change orders. To give you a framework of where this fits into the overall project, we're close to our budget with this piece and still working the entire project to be within budget. So we're committed to delivering the project on budget. That said, moving to slide seven, there are a number of project risks that still continue. We're slowly checking these off, and so we've been carrying this slide for a while, but we want to make sure that you're aware of the risks that are still going forward. So we're in the process of the Horan Road vacation, and we actually have a hearing with the City Council this Thursday, the 23rd. That's the last big puzzle piece to come together to allow us to get started. We're also working with the city on the off-site road improvements, and we've got conceptual design for what that's going to look like. And so the risk is really the cost sharing and what the project is going to bear for that. Also, construction cost escalation, we do have some contingency built into our overall budget for escalation, but the market is really volatile right now, and we don't know if COVID is going to cause costs to go up or down. It could create additional competition. It could also cause material prices to go up. So that's a big risk on our project. And then as we move into construction, we still have the cultural and archaeological risks with the proximity of this site to Confluence and the cultural sites. There's a risk as we get into the ground, but we have done some exploratory work already, and we're working with Department of Archaeological and Historic Preservation, and we feel that those risks are very manageable. Also, just typical construction project risks, we do have contingencies built into the GMP as well as an owner's contingency built into the project budget to manage many of those types of risks. And then the COVID impacts, not only on design, but also on construction. We're still getting our arms around those, but like I said, we're committed to bringing the project in on budget. Okay, so moving to next steps, this is the part where it gets exciting. Slide eight, we have the City Council hearing this Thursday. And like I said, that's the last big piece to vacate Horan Road. And assuming that goes as planned, then we'll be back to the board on August 3rd with a resolution to execute the GMP amendment for site work. And then we have tentatively scheduled a groundbreaking ceremony for the following day on August 4th. And then we're ready to get started. And then the balance of the project, the buildings, we intend to come back to the board with a contract amendment in January to get that work started. Any questions?
Commissioners, if I could make two quick comments. Number one, David is just doing a fabulous job on this project. I mean, as project manager, this is a really difficult project. There's a lot of stuff going on. It's a very big project, and it's going remarkably smoothly for the level of difficulty that we have here. I'd also like to just ask the board if I think it would be useful to have a board member and probably the board president as the representative of the board at least be available, that it'll be a Zoom call for the Wenatchee City Council meeting July 23rd. We don't anticipate at this time that there would be questions that would come to Chelan PUD, but if there were, Dan and David will be available for that call and they can answer any technical questions. But I think it would be valuable to have a board representative indicate the level of commitment that the organization has to the project.
I'd be happy to, Steve.
Okay, so great. David, if you could, or Dan, if you could help us with making sure that information gets to Commissioner Arsenault about the timing for that meeting and when it's likely that that agenda item will come up.
Absolutely. It is late in the agenda on Thursday, so I'll talk to the city staff and see if they can ballpark what time that would be.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Good. Commissioners, any other questions or comments about the service center? All right, Steve, I think we're ready to move on.
Okay,
thank you. Eyes on the service. Appreciate it.
A couple of closing comments about that, real quick, is just that. We will be bringing that resolution forward at the next board meeting, assuming that the City Council acts as we anticipate on Thursday night. In addition to that, we are looking towards a groundbreaking ceremony, and so you'll be getting more information about that as well. And with that, we'd like to turn to an important item, which is this, unfortunately, is Mike Coleman's last board meeting. He'll be retiring at the end of the month. We all know just an incredible job Mike has done. We are primarily an electric utility, and we've gotten into the water and wastewater business. But the broadband business has become our second largest business in terms of revenue. And it's a very difficult, very complex business. It takes a competency around telecommunications, broadband, fiber issues. And we have been so fortunate, and I say personally, I feel like I have been so fortunate coming here with no experience in that, to have someone of Mike's caliber be part of our organization and help guide me through a lot of difficult issues, and I think the organization as well. So we wanted to take just a moment to recognize Mike for his service, now 7 years of service to the district, and would like to turn this over to the board.
So, commissioners, I want to make sure we do have Mike on the phone, correct?
Mike, you're here? Well,
Do we have Mike on the phone?
You know, it's possible he's not. We actually have gone faster than we expected this morning, and I was expecting him to be on the phone, so I'm going to text him right now.
Okay. I have some comments, but I'd really like to have Mike there to hear the comments.
You'll be able to go first as soon as we can get Mike on the phone here to.
Okay, it doesn't matter either way.
And I definitely have some comments at some point.
So how about if we take a quick second and move on to another item, and I've got a text into Mike, and we'll see whether it's a technical problem or whether we just didn't get the timing right here. Oh, is that right? Okay. Commissioners, we're just going to pause for a moment because it seems like he's about to join us.
Commissioners, this is Eric. I can tell you that Mike's retirement led me to purchasing his big green egg yesterday and picking it up at his house. I can tell you he may not make the July 31 retirement date. He's got a heck of a lot of packing to do.
I heard
what? We didn't have a bidding war for that egg? I am upset.
I think he's on now.
Okay, Eric.
I am. I heard Eric talking about me.
Ann, would you like to say a few things?
I would. Oh gosh, I kind of don't know where to start. I have loved working with Mike. He is a consummate professional. He is so knowledgeable. He's terrific at what he does. As Steve said, it's a very complex business. He's smart and he understands it. But I think more than anything else, I love Mike's values. He's just a really good guy. He's kind, he's compassionate, and he cares so much about, he just puts his all into everything he does. So I'm going to really miss him. I actually visited with him this weekend, and I know this is a he has real mixed emotions, a hard decision for him because he wants to get everybody fiber. He wants to serve everybody, and that's impossible to do right now. And I know it's hard for him to walk away and not have that done, but he certainly put us in a great position to eventually get there. So I just want to thank you, Mike, and I will miss you and Leslie.
Thank you, Ann. Those are very, very kind words, and I also will miss you and particularly miss the many opportunities that I've had here to contribute to the community through the fiber program. So thank you very much.
My turn, Gary?
Yes, it's your turn, Randy. Go ahead.
Mike, it's really hard to know where to begin, but I know exactly where I'm going to begin. Dennis and I got to know you pretty well a cold evening up at the 59er Diner at Cole's Corner. And you remember that. You could see that.
I do.
Oh yeah,
and the amazing thing is in between all of that, and I'll talk about it in a minute, but at the very end you managed to thrill another bunch of Lake Wenatchee residents with providing potentially some fiber up some additional areas up at Lake Wenatchee just a few weeks ago. And so Lake Wenatchee was imprinted on your brain for a long time, and the residents up there really appreciate you. Of course, in between that was the donut hole. And so I talk about all of these things here in Chelan County and what you managed to do, the calm and your ability to articulate to our customers the what, where, and the why was so powerful that you calmed some waters that were really pretty troubled when you came in over when am I going to get my fiber. And that's a powerful thing in the job that you did, not counting all of the other things that you did that Ann talked so eloquently about. And I think about the loss to our utility and to our statewide association, which you are readily acknowledged as the go-to guy in the state of Washington for understanding what moves fiber policy. And, you know, those things, it's not just Chelan County that's going to miss you, Mike. But on a more personal note, I'm going to miss you and Leslie, because you guys didn't just come to Chelan Community, you came to Chelan County. And the two of you engaged specifically with the Sunrise Rotary and engaged on a personal level with the people of Chelan County over and above what the utility asked of you. And so you're going to be missed throughout the community. And we're going to miss you. And I just wanted to make one request. Don't ever change your cell phone number, because who knows, somebody might call you saying, I'm in Arkansas and I want to come visit.
Randy, thank you very, very much. I'm sure I'm going to have to go buy a bigger hat after this morning. But I've enjoyed my time here immensely. I've enjoyed both the challenges and the opportunity to make some of the people happy. Like you, I will never forget that day at the 59 Diner. I really considered that my trial by fire, and a lot of emotion involved in it. As there is across the county with the fiber program, I do understand that emotion. I appreciate it. Would love to have gotten a lot more people fiber. However, you know, the physical reality of doing that it is a challenge, and I have been and still am very, very passionate about rural broadband. Probably always will be. And no, I'm not going to change my phone number, Randy, because I'd like that call from you to say you'd like to come visit.
Mike, it's Dennis. You and Randy and I all violated a very basic barroom principle that day at the 59er Diner. We got ourselves physically backed into a corner and hadn't checked our exit. So, the only option we had left was to stare the problem in the eye and be honest with people. And you did a marvelous job that day of executing that with honesty and integrity. And it showed me a lot. My appreciation started with you inherited a program that was involved in chaos, and you had to undo and redo the basic structure in the format and restore the integrity, you know, to the fiber program. And that in and of itself was not an easy task, but you made it look easy. Your southern charm, and I'm going to miss your accent. It always, as tense as I can get sometimes, and you know that, you always have that southern charm in your voice that caused me to have to behave somewhat differently than what my guys were telling me. But you improved the direction of what we did in fiber in Chelan County immensely, and that's greatly appreciated. You know, and you said it well a little bit ago, until it's built out as far as we can build it out, you're not going to make everybody happy. But the only thing that you can do, and you did it well, was to approach each situation with integrity and honesty and look the customer in the eye, you know, and tell them that, you know, we're working on it. Here's where we've been. Here's where we are. Here's where we're going. And here's where you fit in. And, you know, that's been greatly appreciated. In fiber, the wants are infinite, and the ability to satisfy those infinite wants is finite. And that's a tough thing to balance, because everybody wants the service and no one is willing to wait for it. Again, Mike, congratulations. We're going to miss you and Leslie personally and professionally. And I can't think of a person who could have handled the last X number of years with greater grace than you have. So much appreciation for everything you've done.
Dennis, thank you very, very much. You and I have had a great relationship, and I've learned a lot from you while I was here. We have had some of those tense conversations, and we both walked away from it, I think, with a smile on our face and an appreciation for each other. And that means so much to me because it's been such a great environment. And even with you, Dennis, or you, Randy, and Ann saying what you did, I also have to say that I've been very fortunate and grateful because we have such an outstanding board from one end of the table to the other, and your support has been not only marvelous, but marvelously appreciated on my side of the table. So thank you also.
You're welcome. Thank you.
No, go ahead, Steve.
Okay, thanks, Gary. As the newbie to the board, I remember sitting down at Chelan County Fair trying to get people to talk to me about running for office. And when I was successful, which wasn't very often, they kind of skirted around the table. They don't want to talk to you. But I did get an earful about when are you going to get my internet? And throughout my career, the past 4 years here, the one thing that has been a constant for me is we're very clear here in Chelan County what people want. And you are just the consummate professional in helping try to get as much of that need and want provided to our customers. So professionally, again, the consummate professional, you worked really, really hard for the customer owners. On a personal note, I'm going to miss you. And wish you well.
Steve, thank you. You're another one that I will miss. I did have the pleasure and the good fortune of getting to watch you come in and get into your role as a PUD commissioner, and I think I told you more than once, you were getting a drink out of a fire hose, but you always, and very respectfully, listened and took to heart the things that were being said that we, I viewed as a reality regarding the program. And the fact that yes, we would love to get fiber to everybody immediately, but we just couldn't. But I also appreciate the patience that you showed in those situations, and I appreciate what you do for the PUD and the stability that you've added to the board.
Well, thanks, Mike. And maybe someday you'll see a silver Airstream pull up to your front door.
I would enjoy that, Steve. I'll take you trout fishing.
Sounds good. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
So, Mike, this is Gary, and I just want to say when I mentioned to Karen that you were retiring, you should have seen the look on her face. She was terribly disappointed, but then she perked up right away and she said, "Oh, I guess we're going to Arkansas." So you might have more company. You might need to get a bigger house in Arkansas. Just warning you. We have enjoyed thoroughly working with you. Thank you for my education, coming on as a commissioner and trying to understand how all of this works, having lived through all of the early disruptions with the fiber program, and you were able to get it back on track and make headway. Made a lot of people happy, and I was able to witness that on those occasions where there was a concern or a question or an issue, you dealt with it very graciously, and you dealt with it in a way that was looking for solutions to bring positive outcome for the customer owners of Chelan PUD, and that's just wonderful. That's great. And that was exactly what our fiber program needed. And you were the right guy at the right time. I'm sad that you're leaving. I've enjoyed working with you tremendously. And the program has really truly benefited from your knowledge and your ability to to look at problems and look at them in a way that turns them into solutions. It's a real talent, and I very much appreciate that your ability to do that for the district. So I will tell you that retirement's great. You're going to have a great time with it. Enjoy yourself, you and Leslie, and don't be surprised if you do have a couple of commissioners standing on your doorstep with a suitcase in hand just coming to visit.
So, Gary, I would always, always welcome you and any of the other commissioners to show up, and I would make sure that I was capable of providing you adequate guest resources and things to do in Arkansas. It's a gorgeous area. Like this place, it's an outdoor recreation mecca. And I am looking forward to retirement. I will probably keep my fingers in the rural broadband area. As with Steve McKenna, you're coming on to the board, added a very good dimension to it. Had the privilege of spending quite a bit of time with you as you got involved with WAPUDA. Ultimately, I have to thank you for taking over the chair of the telecom committee, because that got me out of it. I really appreciated that. It's a very interesting role, and I did have a good time in it. I know that you have also. So I'm going to kind of circle back around and say something that I've already said once today, but I need to say it many, many times. The board there at Chelan PUD, the five of you, have been tremendous. And I clearly understand that y'all are there to represent the customer owners, your constituents, and you're focused on getting solutions for them. And so that provided me not only support, but it provided a lot of encouragement. My entire team is focused on finding solutions and being creative about those solutions where we have the ability and the flexibility to do that, because that is the right thing to do for the customer owners. I think that the emphasis on rural broadband has just gone through the roof in the last 6 months with COVID. I know that nearly every public meeting that's held anywhere, not only in Washington, but in many, many other states, getting access to good quality broadband in rural areas is probably the hottest topic there is. Lisa Karstetter from Microsoft told me about a meeting that she held recently down in Quincy, a public meeting, and that's all the folks in Quincy wanted to talk about also was the broadband. How do we get it? I do know that Microsoft has stepped up big time in that arena, and the information is they're getting ready to step up even bigger. As you know, we've been under the MOU with them for right at a year now, and we're waiting for some options to be proposed, and I'm very optimistic that as those options come to a point that we can analyze them and work through them, that Microsoft is going to be ready to stand there and support us through testing those options. So it's just another tool in the toolkit to help people get to rural broadband. So y'all said a lot of good words about me, and I sincerely appreciate them, but I also want you to know that I appreciate each and every one of you, along with a lot of the other staff in the district.
So, Mike, this is Steve again. I have a task for you as you go to Arkansas. I need for you to help me understand something. That why do they make potato or donuts with potatoes back there? So that's one question.
And then the other question is that they also make their ice cream from snow. Now, I don't know how often it snows back there, but maybe they don't have much ice cream back there. So I've got a couple questions for you, and I'd like to send you off with the task. So wish you well.
Thank you. I know nothing about donuts made out of potatoes. However, I have many, many good childhood memories of getting snow ice cream. Snow was a rarity where I grew up in southeast Oklahoma, but on the few occasions that it did snow and it was deep enough that you could get clean snow, then snow ice cream was just unbelievably nice and a nice treat for a child.
Well, you know, Mike, if you ever need some snow, I can arrange to ship it to you.
So I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I managed to get through about 58 years of my life without having to shovel snow. And one of my retirement goals is that I never have to shovel it again. So, sincerely, thanks to all of you. I appreciate each and every one of you.
Yeah, I would be completely remiss if I didn't tell at least one brief story. Joyce Lynn and I moved into our residency here about 4 years ago, and it was largely under construction and people just moving into the units. And a lot of clamoring to the PUD commissioner about when we were going to get fiber. And so finally one morning I acquiesced and I said, you know, I have no control over that process, but I know who does. So I'll give that person a call and find out where we are on the schedule and I'll get back to you. So I called Mike and said, hey, here's what my neighbors are asking. Can you just look into your schedule and give me the answer in terms of when they might see fiber installed in our neighborhood? And Mike graciously accepted the assignment, called back an hour later, said, you know what the irony is? We're scheduled to be there tomorrow. And so it set Mike Coleman up as legendary, and Dennis Bowles as an overachiever as a commissioner, but it certainly was appreciated. It was one of those things where there's no way you ever could have planned that. But it worked out well, so thanks for helping my relationship with my neighbors.
You and I both got lucky on that one, Dennis. As you well know, it was already in the work plan, and it was already scheduled for the next day, so that call just came in at the right time.
Oh, those trucks rolled in, and they looked good, and the crew was professional and worked well with the residents, and we were golden. And I appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, commissioners, I thank you for recognizing Mike and his service and tremendous work that he's done here at the district. With that, we've reached the end of this morning's study session, and we have time left, and so there's an opportunity here to be able to get some additional things done. What I would like to suggest is that we jump over the resolutions. We have one resolution that we want to spend some time on this afternoon, and maybe that there are some outside parties who would be interested in hearing that conversation, so we want to make sure they have the opportunity to do so. And so we're ready to go to manager's items. Commissioner Arsenault, if that's okay with you.
Yes, no, that's just fine. Go right ahead.
Okay. I want to invite Jeff Osborne to come up to give us an update on the Chelan Gorge. And we have an annual whitewater event there, and some things will be different this year.
Thank you, Steve. This is Jeff Osborne, Senior License Compliance Specialist, and yes, provide you with a few words on the latest doings on the Chelan River. Chelan PUD staff have observed some significant ground movement on the hillside in Reach 2 of the Chelan River. This is the area immediately above the gorge where the whitewater boating primary events occur. There are several scarps and other features that have been observed over the last 20 years, and they are increasing in size, not only in size, but also the rate at which the ground movement is occurring has appeared to be increasing. So due to this, these observations, PUD engineers believe that there's material there that is perched that could come off the hillside in a significant way at any time. So due to this concern for public health and safety, we have suspended the annual whitewater boating event scheduled for September 12th and 13th this year because of that concern that the risk of something failing while boaters are in there is significant risk. So we have contacted Tom O'Keefe, who is the Pacific Northwest Stewardship Director for American Whitewater, and discussed this concern with him. He has discussed that with his community and supports us suspending the whitewater boating events for 2020. So in the event, recent history, what we've done so far to react to these observations is we've informed the Portland Regional Office of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the regional engineer, to let them know of this new information. We have reviewed and updated our Lake Chelan Emergency Action Plan to according to this new information. I'll get into some specifics a little bit later about what we've done there. We've also notified the Chelan County Sheriff's Office of this potential so that they are alerted and ready to act in the event that some type of significant hillside failure could occur. So we're in the process right now.
Jeff,
go right ahead. If you have questions, please shoot right ahead.
Oh, so this is Ann. Jeff, may I interrupt? Sorry.
No, go right ahead.
I want to ask a question while it's fresh in everybody's mind. So you said scarps. I'm thinking of the word escarpment. So are we talking about faults or fractures? Is that what's occurring?
I think it would be more like a fracture, if you will. How I would describe this is if you were on the observation point kind of right at the start of Reach 3 and looked upstream a ways, there's a cut in the hillside. Looks like someone has taken a dozer and tried to cut a side slope road. That is the scarp or fissure or fracture, however you want to talk about that, that has been observed since, like I said, well over 20 years, early mid-90s. And it has dropped about 10 feet over the last year or so.
Wow.
So it is increasing in size. There are also some fissures, if you will, upstream of there that we have noticed from Google Maps and other observations that seem to be more prevalent and increasing in size. So those are the observations that we are using to say something is going on up there and we need to be prudent in protecting public health and safety.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So we've reviewed our Lake Chelan Emergency Action Plan to include some potential project and fish and wildlife operations in the event that a hillside failure does occur, trying to be as proactive as we possibly can. We're providing this new information to the Chelan City Council, as part of our, regular meetings and updates and communications with those people. We've also are doing the same with key licensed stakeholders, alerting them to this new information. We placed some signage back in 2018 along the gorge area that was for safety measures, and we're reviewing that existing signage to make sure that it is up to date and is present and whether we need to include more signage there to ensure that the public is aware that this is a risk area. We'll be providing a notification letter to Washington, D.C., the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in D.C., letting them know that we will be suspending whitewater boating for this year and then continuing to work with American Whitewater on an annual basis to review the observations and ensure that we are protecting those voters to the greatest extent practicable. Obviously, we'll continue to monitor regularly. I think it's at least once a month. Engineering staff is going up there to look and see what is occurring. And then, again, trying to be prepared to enact our emergency action plan in the event that a failure occurs. So that is what I have for you today. Are there any other questions that I can answer for you?
This is Randy. Just a question that, what if question, and I don't know if you've thought this far out, under the assumption that some type of event does occur, will it change the whole makeup of the stream? And if so, what does that mean going forward after an event like that occurs?
Excellent questions that we have pondered considerably and kicked around. We have a very large committee that is formed that virtually has every aspect of the district operations in it. There's a potential, depending on the size, we have some reports that have looked at small, medium, and large events. The most likely a small event, which is in the vicinity of around estimated to be 30,000 cubic yards, which is still a lot of material, likely would not block the Chelan River for any length of time, probably hours. The additional investigations recommended to increase flows because most of the material is going to be sandy, silty, small gravels. Increase flows to try and flush that material out of the Chelan River into the Columbia River to protect the reach for habitat channel. Again, these are just thoughts and options at this point that we are considering as far as the project operations and fish and wildlife operations that I mentioned. Have not come up with anything concrete yet, but those are the types of responses that we're considering in our kind of our emergency response plan. So that did that
you.
Answer your question?
Yeah.
Fully?
Yes. Yeah.
Jeff, this is Ann again. Hey, I just have a. I just wanted to visit with you a little bit more about this, but I'd like to do it offline, just as so as not to take up everybody else's time. So, may I give you a call? Tomorrow or the next day.
Absolutely, at your convenience. Please call me on my cell phone. Okay. I'm generally at home, so feel free at any time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, commissioners, we'll just hold on a second. I think Steve is arranging for the next presentation. Steve, we can barely hear you.
Oh, sorry about that. I had to put myself on mute there. So let me just check once again. Carrie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, okay. So it was because I had put myself on mute. My own problem. Carrie, welcome, and we're ready for your report.
Thank you. This is Carrie Wendell, Customer Relations Manager, and I'm here to give you another update on the customer impacts that we're seeing from COVID. Thinking about it this morning, I realized this is either the eighth or ninth update since this started. So I'm I'm surprised that we've had to talk about this so many times and how much has happened over this period of time. But you're going to see from the numbers today that there's not very much of a change. So we can move to the first slide. So here are the latest unemployment numbers. There's been some additional information that we've found with Employment Security Department that's been added. So you can see from those numbers, the trends are very similar as they have been. Any questions on that slide, or can we move to the next slide?
Commissioners, any questions? Go ahead, Terry. You can move on to the next slide.
Okay. Next slide. This slide is the slide related to customers that have self-reported to us. So since the last meeting that we met, we've only added two new reports. And we have one active payment arrangement from that group. There's been 28 new customers that have been approved for energy assistance through community action. So we brought that total up to 230 since the 1st of July. And then, again, the internal credit scores, out of the 242 customers, we still have the residential, about 59% of those customers are the regular customers that are typically late. And then for the commercial customers, the 39 businesses, those are, we still have about 44% of those that are the typically late payers. So not very much of a change on this slide. We can move to the next slide. So this is the revenue past due. You can see the new numbers are reflected here. So as of July 14th, based on the 242 past due accounts, there's approximately 36% of the residential and 45% of the commercial accounts that are normal past due amounts that would be subject to disconnection under the normal circumstances. And of these, there are 10 residential accounts and 6 commercial accounts that have balances that exceed $500, and 53 residential and 5 commercial accounts have a balance between $250 and $500. So I know that was a question that Commissioner Arsenault had at the last meeting, so hopefully that answers that question for you.
It does, Carrie. Thank you. If I'm reading it correctly, my understanding is the average electric bill for residential in the county is about $50. So that means that those 10 residential accounts where the amount exceeds 500, it's actually 10 times the average monthly bill is where we're ranging in right now for those customers that are in arrears.
Right, for the 242, yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next slide. Based on these are the customers that are past due that have not self-reported. We have about 282 accounts past due as of the July 14th date. The numbers, as you can see, are consistent with the last 3 months.
Hey, Carrie, if I'm looking at this correctly, in the box on the left where it says disconnect notices, that on July of 2019, there were 1,093. Is that disconnect notices? Am I reading that correctly?
That's correct. That's how many we sent out for the whole month of July of 2019.
And so, thank you.
So if you move to the next slide, related to the Helping Hands distribution, since this is in the middle of the month, there hasn't been a change on this. So this slide still looks the same until we have the end of the month numbers for July. That's all I have for my update. Is there anything, any questions that anyone has?
Commissioners, any questions for Carrie? Carrie, thank you very much for this report. Thank you for keeping this data and then presenting it to commissioners at our meetings. I think it's very valuable, and I know it's a little bit of extra work on your team's part, but we really appreciate it, and it's very telling. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to take a moment and just talk about where we're going to go from here. We've got an issue upcoming in that the governor's proclamation with respect to how to handle disconnect and past due accounts is good through the end of the month. The board's direction, the decision that we made at our April meeting in advance of the governor's proclamation, I would note, indicated that we would maintain this policy through the end of the month as well. So they are currently due to expire at roughly the same time. We don't know what will happen in terms of the governor's proclamation. We continue to look for information that might come from there. We've seen a number of times that when governor's proclamations are due to expire, that they are extended, but only in the last day or sometimes even after the last day. So that may happen again. Of course, our view is that there is not authority there in the governor's office to direct the PUD with respect to what actions we should take. But we certainly are cognizant and aware of the important role that the state plays in terms of keeping track of these kinds of issues and establishing statewide policy. Our plan at this point, unless there is an objection from the board, is to allow the no disconnect, no late fee policy to lapse at the end of the month. Although I would expect that there probably will be some intervening event that will cause us to at least think about that one more time. You would note from the numbers at $136,000 of retail revenue past due, this is not an issue that creates a significant financial threat for the district. And so our thinking about this is not driven by a significant concern there. But we do have some accounts that are getting to be rather large, and it would be helpful, we think, to begin to work with folks, as we have in previous years, to develop payment plans before those numbers get to be so large that they become very difficult to even address in a payment plan. So we're thinking that it's time to begin to make that transition. Carrie and her team have proven to be very adept over the years at working closely with customers in a collaborative way to be able to develop those kinds of payment arrangements. And I would not anticipate that we would be moving to any sort of mass disconnect policy in August. There would be time there to begin to just begin to work with the customers. And I would expect that we would be able to converse with the board about how that process is going before we got into any sort of serious use of the disconnect policy. But we will have this event, the end of the month show, before the next board meeting. So that's our plan going forward right now, and unless there is an objection from the board.
Commissioners, any feedback we can provide to Steve? Steve, I'm going to...
No objection here. I support what Steve is proposing.
Thank you, Ann. Was there someone else there? Is that you, Randy?
Not here. I'm with Ann.
Okay.
Gary, this is Dennis. The only thing I would ask would be of Carrie, is there any tools that she needs that the board could provide to, create that relationship with customers or continue that great relationship with our customers? So are there any needs out there that we need to help you with?
Carrie still on the line?
There we go. Sorry about that. We have, thank you, Commissioner. I think that we have a lot of tools right now. We still have a lot of helping hands funds. We still have the EAP, Energy Assistance Programs. And I think now it's just reaching out to those customers and trying to get them to start making some payments, because without any leverage, it's hard to get some action. So I think just knowing that we could be potentially starting to disconnect is probably going to make them make a better effort of making payments to us. So I think we have a lot of tools, but I think it's something that I can keep in mind as we go forward in the next month and see how things fall. Thank you.
You're welcome. If you have needs, just take those through Steve and let the board do what it can to help out.
Okay. Thank you.
Good comments, Dennis. Thank you. And I'd like to just jump in and say that I support exploring and moving forward and having those discussions. The the dollar amounts that we're talking, at least for those 10 customers where they're exceeding $500 a month, that might be very difficult for some individuals to come up with. And having talked with other PUD commissioners at other PUDs throughout the state, dollar amounts are much larger at other PUDs. And to some extent, that's simply because the monthly bill is larger than what residents of Chelan County pay. And it becomes a burden, a real burden, the longer this goes on for individuals to try to find a path forward to pay those bills. And the last thing we want to do is to create a blemish on anyone's financial record. So I think trying to explore and find ways, while the dollar amount is still modest, to come up with a payment structure makes a great deal of sense and benefits those individuals that are struggling to find a way to pay their bills. So I think that's great. And, Carrie, I know you and your crew do an excellent job, so thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Commissioners. With that, I'd like to turn to one other manager's item. Thank you, Carrie. So we are preparing. Senior team continues to talk regularly about COVID-19 impacts on the employees. Later today, we'll be putting out an all-employee email that does a couple things. First of all, we continue to track the rate of infection in the community, and the numbers have not been good in the last few weeks. We've seen a pretty dramatic increase in the number of confirmed cases. Although hospitalizations are not overwhelming the hospital system, they are on the border right now of the limits of what they can handle. Fortunately, we have not seen a large increase in deaths, though. But that increase in the number of confirmed positives is causing us increased concern. We are tracking all of that data as well as our own data. We now have 3 confirmed positives within our own employee base. That has occurred just in the last couple of weeks, the first 3 that we have had. We were fortunate that at least as of the end of last week, none had been hospitalized. Taking all that into account, we are also confronting a couple of things. We had established a limitation on non-essential travel that was basically through the summer. We need to send signals to our employees about where we're going with that. And then in addition to that, we also know that there are a number of employees that have to plan their personal lives, and there's a question about when we will be asking them to come back to work. And so this particular notice that we're sending out today states that we do not anticipate. In fact, people can plan their lives such that we will not be bringing those who can work remotely back to work before the end of the year. We don't see anything that creates the intervening event, which would be something like a vaccine or a therapy that would allow us to be able to bring more people back more quickly. And the unpredictable nature of the COVID-19 gives us concern about the fact that we know that planning needs to occur. We've got a lot of parents in our workforce. They have to deal with how they're going to address their children, and particularly with the limitations on school that may occur. So we want to create that clarity for them. and let them know that it will be at least the end of the year before we will revisit the question as to whether we're bringing employees back to work. Now, of course, all of the folks that cannot work remotely, we will continue to expect that they show up at work, because we've got a lot of important work we need to do as we try to balance employee health and the reliable provision of utility services. We're very appreciative of the fact that there was a letter from our bargaining unit that went to all employees about a week ago that describes their support for the importance of taking preventative action to try to reduce the spread of COVID-19, particularly in our workplace, including both social distancing and the use of masks. This has become our most significant safety issue. Certainly the most risk for employees is associated with COVID-19. We are making it even more clear with the note that we're sending today that we will require the use of masks consistent with guidance from the safety department. And it's been rare, but we have had a couple of events of employees saying that they are unwilling to wear a mask. And so we are now being more clear that we'll apply the same policies that we do with other personal protective equipment, which is if you're not willing to wear it, then you are no longer welcome on the job, and that you will be subject to progressive discipline that can include time off without pay and escalating potentially to separation from employment, although we hope that would never happen, that supervisors have the authority to implement this policy as of now. In fact, it has in fact been implemented even in the last week. We also have been in contact with our colleagues around the country, and there are utilities in other states that are having much more difficult time than we are, the Florida, Texas, Arizona, California utilities. They have higher rates of infection pro rata than we have. One of the things that they are telling us is that the vast majority of employees are becoming infected. From what they can tell, it's happening at home, not at work. That, in fact, workplace protections generally have been effective. And so we're trying to reinforce that it's important to be safe at work and at home. Final thing that we'll be noticing in this particular communication is we have acquired some new temperature-taking machines that automatically take temperature. You might want to try it out, commissioners, when you come in. It's actually down near the cafeteria, that the door that comes in close to the cafeteria there. We all tried it out last week. It's pretty cool. So you have to take your glasses off if you're wearing glasses, and so it can spot your eyes, and works better if you pull your mask down. And what it will do is quickly take your temperature, issue a sticky tag. That sticky tag you can place someplace and should take place prominently on your clothing to indicate that you've come through and that your temperature is good, at least for today. So that there's a way of now being able to do this in a way that ultimately gives us some assurance that people are, in fact, taking their temperatures before they come to work. We're trying this out. The machines have the capability to collect data about who's come through, and particularly the number of folks that would be positive, and positive in the sense of the temperature is too high. We have got all of that turned off right now. We just were not prepared to deal with any of the thoughts about privacy data. We really wanted to pilot this, just try it out, see how it goes, see where the warts are, and be able to fix those. So for right now, it's really just in a pilot mode, and all of us will be trying it out. And again, we encourage you to do so as well, and give us any feedback you might have about how those will work. We've acquired 5 of them that are spread across the district right now. Final thing I'd say is, as we've said all along, we intend to be data-driven and evidence-based, and so we are responding to the data as it has evolved in both in Chelan County and even within our own employee base, and taking actions that fit the circumstances. With that, I'm open to any questions that you might have.
Steve, this is Randy. What's the current status in our area of contact tracing?
That's a really good question, Commissioner Smith, and I say that because I'm not going to be able to give you as clear an answer as I would like. We have been discussing that. CDHD originally was doing the contact tracing, and then the state stepped up and said that they were going to train an army of contact tracers, and they would be available, and basically that they would take over contact tracing. You may recall that we had offered to train PUD employees to do that to help supplement the CDHD, and we had gotten so far as to develop an interlocal agreement and then did not sign it because CDHD had concluded that they had this availability from the state. And it certainly was better than what we could provide because ours was going to be an as-available resource as work would allow. We've had a chance to kind of take a look at this some because we've had three employees go through, have been confirmed positive. And from what we can tell, they do in fact receive a call from a contact tracer. It's not as timely as we had hoped it would be, and not as timely as what the state is suggesting is necessary to move forward from in different phases of opening up businesses. And there does appear to be a problem that we've identified, at least, which is the contact tracer will not only ask the confirmed positive about contacts, but will ask them if they have phone numbers. And if it appears, and we're not 100% sure of this, it appears that if the phone numbers are not provided, then there may not be a follow-up on the contact trace. So that certainly seems to be a hole in the system, because how many people have phone numbers readily available that they can provide for anyone that they might have been in contact with. So we're reaching out to CDHD seeking to have a conversation about what we've learned from this and whether there are ways to be able to improve the contact tracing process. I would want you to know that we do have contact tracing in place with respect to a supervisor of a confirmed positive is provided a form that says here are the actions that you should take. One of those is to talk to the confirmed positive to identify any contacts that they may have had. Remember, contacts are within 6 feet for anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes that are in the PUD employee base, and then we follow up with any PUD employees who've been identified as a contact. So we are making sure that at least we're managing the part of this that is associated with our employees. Does that answer your question, Commissioner Smith?
Yes, it does.
Commissioners, any other comments, feedback for Steve?
Okay.
Terry, could I make just a quick comment?
Yes, please go ahead, Randy.
I don't know how many my fellow commissioners monitor the COVID as closely as I do. I'm monitoring it very closely. This past week, had a personal friend who is identified with COVID. He also happens to be a memory care patient here in Kashmir, and which makes me really nervous because I'm a little further research, come to find out memory care patients are 1.7 times as likely to die from COVID as all other patients. So it's getting personal.
Yeah.
And if I could just add that, I'd say that having confirmed positives within our employee base has certainly raised the level of angst for all of us here. that completes the manager items that we have for today. Well, we do have time to move on to commission items if you would like.
Commissioners, would you like to move on to commissioner items at this point? Does anyone have anything to add?
Well, if nobody else is going to talk about last week's association meetings, I'll just say that from this commissioner's perspective, I told George Kahn, while I truly miss the connection, and I think we as commissioners need the connection, the Zoom calls seem to have a greater attendance and a greater attention than some of our regular in-person meetings. And so there's two sides to Zoom. And I staff has even, I guess, figured out, I did not participate, a way to create a social hour via Zoom. And sounds like that was very beneficial for the 15 to 20 people that participated in that.
That's good feedback, Randy. And I think that the attendance at the WAPUTA meetings seems to be growing larger with every virtual meeting that we hold. As we do headcounts, the numbers certainly seem to be increasing. So you're right. That is a very, if you look for the silver lining, that certainly is a silver lining. And there's also very good material being shared amongst all the PUDs at the Washington Public Power Association. So I agree with you, Randy. So, Steve, I think that might be the conclusion of commissioner comments.
Okay, I might jump for one more agenda item, and that's the delegation of action items from the last board meeting. And we're also going to pick up, we've had some in the parking lot for a while that we have cleared out. There was a customer comment at the last meeting that David Allender, just want you to know that John Stoll has provided direction, and Andy Wendell and Ray Potter went out and visited with the customer, and we have at least no particular follow-up action item on that. There's an ongoing conversation, so we're just going to continue to work on that. Rebecca had an action item to work with Justin to add a Stehekin update to the next Tri Commission agenda that was completed the same day as the board meeting. A couple of the things that have been in our parking lot, we had a commitment to get back to the board with an outreach plan for Stehekin. You got that at the last board meeting, so we'll be pulling that out of the parking lot. Commissioner Congdon had one to work with Rebecca on the balanced scorecard item. You heard that report earlier today. I had one that's quite old, actually, but to identify available governance training opportunities for new commissioners So we've looked through the NWPPA, WAPUTA, APPA, and have completed that action item and included it to the commissioner orientation binder. And then Carrie Wendell had one to provide a summary of dollar amounts of past two accounts, and you saw that in the presentation here today. So that's it for our summary of delegated action items.
So should we, at this point, would you like to tackle the delegation of items from today?
I'd prefer to wait just in case we have something that shows up later in the afternoon.
Okay, sounds good. Well, then I think this is a perfect time for us to break for lunch and to re-adjourn then back at 1 o'clock for the afternoon's session. So with that, we will adjourn and we will meet back here at 1 o'clock. Welcome to the July 20, 2020 business session of the Chelan County PUD Commission meeting. I'd like to thank everyone for calling in this afternoon, and in the spirit of social distancing due to COVID-19 virus, today's meetings will be conducted virtually by phone. Members of the public that may be on the phone are encouraged to make comments and ask questions at the end of today's business session. I will open the phones for such comment. So, commissioners, we have an agenda, consent agenda. What are your wishes?
I would move approval of the consent agenda, which has been modified to include resolution number 10.
Second. Okay, thank you, Randy. Do we have a second?
Second.
Been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda with the addition of resolution number 10. Is there any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The ayes have it. So, Steve, I'd like to turn this back over to you for discussion of the regular agenda.
Okay, we have one resolution. That is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for Rock Island Dam Spillway Pier 1 repairs, bid number 19-83, and authorizing the Rock Island Dam Spillway Pier 1 repairs be obtained by negotiation or by re-advertising. I believe Scott Tidd will start off this presentation, and then Dan Frazier may have some comments as well.
Good afternoon. This is Scott Tidd, project manager down here at Rock Island Dam. I thought it was appropriate at this time to maybe give you a brief lead-in to this subject, just to remind everybody what's going on. Back in November 2018, a crack was observed on the downstream side of Spillway Pier 1. After evaluation, engineering staff concluded that the load-carrying capacity of the spillway deck had been reduced and structural repairs would be required to restore the pier to its original structural capacity. So the planned work includes relocating electrical conduits that are currently embedded in the spillway road deck, widening selected existing expansion joints in the spillway road deck, and then after that's done, repair the crack in the pier and repair other concrete spillway deck structures. So there's kind of a lead-in. Dan, do you want to jump in?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. This is Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. So the project was put out to bid, and on July 8th, we opened the bids on the project. We had five bids, ranging from $3.7 million to $6.5 million. During the evaluation of the bids by our project team, we received inquiries, and eventually two bid protests were received. And we evaluated those protests and found merit to the issues were brought forward in the protests, and that has helped us move to this point of rejecting all bids. These protest issues included licensure issues of one of the bidders and questioning whether some of the bidder's data that was submitted was accurate from other bidders. So in light of that and our own evaluation, the team recommended to reject all bids and attempt to obtain the contract for this project via negotiation, but potentially rebidding depending on if the negotiation is unsuccessful. And part of that reason, I should also clarify, is that four of the five bids were in excess of 15% over the engineer's estimates, which statutorily become non-responsive bids.
Okay, so good. Thanks, Dan. So going from there, as Steve Wright had just mentioned at the beginning, this attached resolution proposes to reject the bids, ask for authorization to proceed, and I think that's about it, unless anybody's got any questions.
Scott, would you do one more thing and just identify what the risk to the project schedule is and whether there's any concern with respect to safety issues?
Well, probably no change to the safety issues except for the structural stability of the dam. But aside from that, we're trying to hit a window of reduced spill. So if we can't move quickly and get this work in place soon, we're going to miss the low water or the minimal spill period, which is going to begin late August, September. So we're hoping to take advantage of fall and into winter period so that we can actually get a lot of work done. In fact, if not all of it. Otherwise, with the spill, we're really limited by spill deck outages I apologize, a train is coming by here. So we're trying to take advantage of the time, and if we miss that window, we're going to have to wait till next year.
Okay, and just to be clear, particularly if there are folks listening, because I know this has been presented to the board before, we are not concerned that there's a risk of imminent failure of the dam or even not so imminent failure. It's a crack that needs to be fixed, but it's not an emergency situation for us. Commissioners, do you have any questions?
Good explanation. Thanks, Steve. Commissioners? Hearing no questions, Steve, next item would be to receive a motion. Is that correct?
Yes, please.
Well, commissioners, do I hear a motion on this resolution?
I'll make a motion, resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for Rock Island Dam Spillway Pier 1 repairs, bid number 1983, authorizing the Rock Island Dam Spillway Pier 1 repairs be obtained by negotiation or by re-advertising.
Thank you, Steve. Is there a second to Steve's motion?
I'll second that.
Thank you, Randy. So it has been moved and seconded that resolution number 11 to reject all bids and declare that no bids were received for Rock Island Dam Spillway Pier 1 repairs, bid number 19-83, be moved to negotiation or re-advertising. So all those in favor, I should ask, is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 And those opposed say no. The ayes have it.
Great.
Thanks. All right, Steve. Thank you.
Okay, and so that does it for our regular agenda. And commissioners, we did cover items 12, 13, and 14 earlier. Teresa, do you have our delegation of action items? So we just have one, and that's the issue of removing the constituents' communication from the balanced scorecard report for the board. Rebecca will take responsibility for that. Did we miss anything?
I don't think so. Commissioners, did we accurately relay those matters of delegation of action items?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, I think you have it. Is there anything else on the agenda at this time, Steve, or can I open it up?
I think we're ready for item 16, which is additional public comment.
So if there are any public on the lines today, what I would ask you to do is please, before I open the line, please state your name, your address for the record, since these are recorded. And if you would please be kind enough to limit your comments to 3 minutes so that others who might be on the line wanting to speak will have time to do so. We would circle back if you need additional comments after everyone has spoken. So, Teresa, if you'd go ahead and open the line. If there's anyone, any member of the public that would like to comment, now would be the time. Steve, hearing no members of the public wishing to make a comment, and you mentioned that there would be no need for executive session today, is that correct?
Correct.
I think we are at the conclusion of our meeting, unless there are any other comments the commissioners would like to make at this time. Steve, does the staff have any additional comments to make?
No, I think we have covered everything we wanted to get through today.
Okay, hearing that no additional comments or material to cover, we shall stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody. Have a great couple of days. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Gary.
All right, take care.